I don't really know my father. My father was interested in me until he wasn't. It's difficult for me to even process that because that person doesn't exist in my mind, in my heart. I'm sure there were times when he was great, and looking back on that when I was like a baby, I ran across a baby picture of me before my sister was even born, my mom and my dad, and I'm like, I wonder what he was like then. They seemed happy in the picture. I wonder what it was like then, if he was responsible, if he was doing what it took.
From the Family Life Podcast Network, this is Family Life Blended. I'm Ron Deal. This donor-supported podcast helps blended families and those who love them pursue the relationships that matter most. I'm so glad you've joined us in this journey. Welcome to episode number 63 and our latest edition of Growing Up in a Blender. Now, if you're new to this podcast, you might be asking yourself right now, what in the world does he mean by growing up in a blender? Well, at Family Life Blended, we believe that parents and step-parents can learn a lot about their own children by listening to others walk through their blended family childhood and talk about it and tell stories related to their experience in their family. So from time to time, we interview someone who now, as an adult, has an adult perspective about their stepfamily story. If you look back through our podcast, you'll find a number of episodes entitled Growing Up in a Blender. If you like this episode, you might go back and listen to some of those as well. Now, before we jump in, if you haven't heard, we are gearing up for our annual summit on stepfamily ministry. This is the premier equipping event for pastors, lay leaders, and couples wanting to help other blended family couples. I would love to meet you there. Visit summitonstepfamilies.com for all the information you need. Summitonstepfamilies.com. Okay, this Growing Up in a Blender conversation is with Shelby Abbott. He is an author, campus minister, and conference speaker on staff with Family Life. His passion for university students has led him to speak at college campuses all over the U.S. He's the author of a number of books, including Pressure Points, Doubtless, and his latest, which is about cohabitation, called What's the Point? He and his wife, Rachel, have two daughters and live in Pennsylvania. Here's my conversation with Shelby Abbott. Looking back over your life, what did your parents' divorce teach you about you?
My parents' divorce taught me about me. It took a long time to probably discover more layers of that, because God in His grace has been able to help me to see that even though there was mistakes that were made, sin that happened on both sides, even on my own, that that things were not a mistake. And reading specifically in Jonah, you realize that Jonah's disobedient, yet God uses his disobedience, for example, to bring the pagan sailors to himself. That was a direct result of Jonah's rebellion, his sin, yet it was something that God still orchestrated and worked out in the process of the messiness of rebellion. So that's been a little bit of a picture of how I've been able to learn and understand who I am in light of the mistakes that were made from the past, both by my father, my mom, both my step-parents, myself, my siblings, and things like that. And so the divorce and the subsequent remarriage that happened shaped who I am in a number of different ways. And I found that out even more recently, too, through counseling, of just realizing that I told my wife, it started with like a lot of just anger when I was in my car. I was road raging and people would cut me off or people wouldn't use their blinker or they'd cut in or whatever. And I'd be so mad. I was asking my wife, Rachel, why do you think I get so mad in the car? And she goes, I don't know. And that started to manifest itself in other different ways. And so I went to a counselor eventually and just said, I'm just angry. And it's really coming out in my car a lot. And he was able to like link some stuff over time to help me discover that the divorce that happened when I was 3 and a half, I believe, was when my folks got divorced. And then my mom remarried my stepdad, who I call my dad, when I was 6. And just discovering that my kids at the time were around my age when I was struggling with this anger. So I'm like, oh, my kids are like 3, 4, 5 right now. And that's what was kind of triggering some stuff for me, of just knowing that there was an abandonment there. There was some hurt and anger, some wounding that happened at that particular time in my life. And I was seeing that kind of in my children at the time, just because of their age. Their age was close in proximity to where I was at the time.
Yeah, I got to imagine that you as a dad wanted to protect your children, seeing them at that age, seeing them as vulnerable as they are at that age, and then going, huh, that was me. Who was looking after me?
Exactly. And that's what the counselor was able to help draw out of me and help me to see. So there's all these personality tests that people do. I'm a Myers, you know, on my Myers-Briggs, I'm a whatever, ESTJ. But Enneagram's gotten more popular, and for better or worse, whatever that is, one of the things about my Enneagram personality is I'm an 8, and therefore I'm a protector, and I will confront people as well, because in the spirit of protection, which usually, according to the tests, kind of link back to childhood trauma. And I discovered that over time, that I'm very fiercely protective of my kids. And I think you're exactly right, seeing them in this moment, wanting to protect them and knowing the injury that did happen to me as a result of my parents getting divorced and subsequent, you know, popping around. My mom had custody of me and my sister. We would have summer visitation with my dad, with my father. And so that caused like a number of different key issues in my life that shaped me into who I am today. Of course, again, that didn't come out until I was in my, you know, late 30s, early 40s, where I discovered, oh, this anger that's been here, it's been here for a long time as a result, going back all the way to when I was 3, 4 years old.
Right. You only saw the vulnerability of yourself when you were finally looking at your own children. Mm-hmm. And so I'm connecting a couple of the things that I've heard you say. One of them was, what did the divorce teach you about you? You gave me the God is sovereign and he was working behind the scenes. He's involved in so many things in my life and I can rest in that. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I heard you say. Mm-hmm. And yet I also heard you say, but before I've kind of grown into that understanding, I found myself angry, found myself reacting to circumstances where I saw my own vulnerability in my own children and, you know, was just angry over the selfishness of my parents and how things came down. And by the way, maybe that's a piece of what the road rage thing, people being selfish or, you know, inconsiderate, you know, that just activates that part of you that says, oh, there's an injustice here. And it just brought out that anger in you that had carried for a really long time. So I'm so glad to hear you say, and I believe it's true, the right understanding of God helps us cope with things that have happened to us in our life. On our journey to getting that right understanding of God, we often feel lost and confused and don't know how to cope with some of the things that have happened to us. So am I capturing that journey for you?
Yeah, I'd say that's pretty accurate. The going through daily life as an adult and, you know, working and parenting and being a husband and all that kind of stuff, you don't really like try to find the intentional links to that unless you're being purposeful about it and thinking about those things. So asking the question is something that my counselor did, and I was just like, no, this is not something that big of a deal. It's not affecting my day-to-day life, yet the programs that are running in the background consistently are shaping the narrative of how I think, how I process things, how I react to other people, how suffering forces me to like cope in certain ways. And those all go back to like some very early times in my life where I would be like, this is psychobabble. This is silly. This is not a part of who I am. I'm just like, I'm, you know, in my early 40s now. This was back when I was, you know, in my single digits as a child. This is not that big of a deal. But I think uncovering those things intentionally helps you to see that this does shape who I am as a person. Yet God has redeemed that by his grace. And I'm able to now see it with clarity, therefore make better decisions and be more intentional about how I process things, when I get angry, asking the questions why, assigning blame to certain things, certain people, those kind of things. They really do shape your everyday life, even though you don't think that they do.
Mm-hmm. You just gave our listener a gift, because they're listening not only today to learn something about how to parent better or step parent better a child who has experienced some similar things to you, but many of our listeners are also reflecting on their own childhoods right now. Mm-hmm. And they're mindful that they had some things happen that brought a sense of insecurity or lack of safety, or just being unsure who loved them and how reliable those people were in their lives. And so they're reflecting backwards on their own life as well as forwards for the child that they're caring for. So let me just kind of come full circle. Knowing that eventually you do get to a better understanding of what happened to you as a kid, what did you learn about you? Like, if you could, jump inside that 3, 4, 5-year-old. And I know that's really difficult, but in those early seasons after the breakup, where did that leave you? What was the impact on you? How did you cope with it?
I have a sister who's younger, 2 years younger, and so I wasn't going it alone, so that was good. I felt like I had someone who was a bit of a comrade in that whole season of life. And so I think mostly what it had to do with was the confusion of who do I belong to? Because my mom did have full custody of us, we were with her throughout the regular school year, and then we would go visit our father during the summers. And that was usually filled with fun because it was vacation, but not a lot of depth per se. And so I think there was just confusion about, like, well, it's more fun to be with dad, but I think I know the right thing is to probably be with mom because there's a little bit more reality there and maturity. That being said, my father did get remarried eventually too. So a lot of my memories have to do with my blended family with my mom and my stepdad, and then my blended family with my dad and my stepmom. And so there were two blended families that I was popping back and forth between. In the school year, I was with my mom, and then during the summers, I was with my dad. And that, there's constant change. A friend of mine has on her email signature, "Constant change is here to stay." And that's one of those things that's just, it kind of defined my life. So in addition to all of that, my stepdad, my dad, was in the Air Force. And so we started moving almost immediately as soon as my mom got remarried.
Being in the military is almost the definition of constant change, right?
Totally, yeah. All the time. As soon as you get used to stuff, you're ripped up by the roots and you're planted somewhere else. And you don't have a choice. They tell you what you're doing. And the kids are often the ones who suffer the most, I think, through that, because you make friends and then you lose friends, and then you make friends and you lose friends. And then you start to learn, if I make too good of friends here, it's going to even hurt more on the tail end of this.
You get a little more calloused.
Yeah.
You kind of hold back a little bit. You get a lot more cautious.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, of course, there's good that has come out of that as well, because I used to be very, very inflexible, very unwilling to change, very shy and introverted is not bad, but I was just afraid to connect with people and take steps of faith and be risky about stuff. And military lifestyle forces you to do the opposite. And in many ways, God redeemed that and made me into who I am today. So I look back on that. I wouldn't want to do it over again, but at the same time, I'm thankful for it, the way it happened. So I think there was a process of shaping and refining and molding as a kid. And the divorce, the breakup in general, caused a lot of confusion in me as a young person and in my sister as well. And then for a season as well, my stepdad, he brought his two kids into our family as well, who were both older. My stepbrother John was about 6 months older than me, and my stepsister Melissa, I think, is 4 years older than me. She was with us for about a year or two, I think, and then she went back to go live with her mom. And my stepbrother was with us for not much longer after that, and then he went to go live with his mom. So it was a a season of having step siblings and then them leaving as well.
Okay, so I'm hearing, again, constant change. The military life, when stepdad came into the picture, essentially mirrored what happened with the original breakup and divorce. That is, here you are again without power. Nobody consults you. You don't get a say. Here's the change you have to adapt to. Bam. It's thrust upon you. And then there's more change and there's more change. And each time mom got married, dad got married, and then military life, there's change upon change upon change. And I am hearing you say, hey, there was some resilience that came out because of that. I had to learn how to cope with change. But at the same time, I'm also hearing, wow, who do I belong to? Mm-hmm. And where do I belong?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of that identity question of, I'm not exactly sure where I fit. Did you feel like you had two families, that you were a part of each of them, or that you were constantly trying to figure out which one you really belong to? How would you say that?
I think as a kid, you just let the experiences wash over you. So I remember it not really thinking too in-depthly about the fact that I had two families. I think it was, my father was only remarried, I think, for about 4 or 5 years, and then he got divorced again. So my stepmom, who was in the picture and great in a number of different ways, she left the picture pretty soon mm-hmm. after they were married.
And once they broke up, she didn't keep any contact with you or anything?
She did, actually. And she actually has more contact with me today than my father does. And that's as a result of them living in the same place over these many, many years. And so I went back for a funeral recently, for example, in California, and I reconnected with her there and saw her there, and it was great. You know, she always was very loving and kind to me, always very thoughtful and a gift in many ways. So I don't think as a kid you think, oh, I got two families, and I think you, as an adult, you look back on that and reflect and go, okay, this is why, and you start to connect the dots. You go, this is why I thought this, or this is why I thought that. But as a kid, you kind of just experience stuff, and it's hard in the moments, I think, and there's crying that happens and tearful experiences and joyful experiences, but you look back on it and go, okay, I was fine at the time, but maybe I wasn't as fine. Because a number of things happened to me as a result of that cataclysmic event of the original divorce.
My mom
got a job at an apartment complex as a manager in an apartment complex in California, where we were at the time, same town. It was in that apartment complex that I experienced sexual abuse that happened to me. And so I didn't realize it then, but like looking back on it, I think I blamed the divorce for things that happened like that. On top of that, then I'm being torn from one family to another. My parents aren't speaking highly of one another when we're with the other one. It's always the other parent's fault, and the kids automatically get put in the middle, and therefore our opinions become shaped. It's very easy to take sides, and so you start to think, well, this is the good parent, this is the bad parent, blah, blah, blah. And then the military equation comes into it. The only reason we're a military family is because they got divorced from the beginning. The moving that happens and everything that happens after that, of losing friends and losing family members and losing, you know, stability and a sense of purpose, all of that can be traced back to yes. the original event.
And it's sort of like then all the blame goes back to the original event.
Exactly, yeah. And then you ask who are the players in that event, and then you go, why couldn't they have just worked it out? There's that old phrase, stay together for the kids, which is, you know, bad in many ways. But it's like, when you're younger, you think, if you would have just been able to work it out, like, we wouldn't be in this situation. Again, that being said, my stepdad, familial-wise, was the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
Well, you know, as a matter of fact, I wanted to read this back to you. You wrote at one point, in a very real sense, my stepdad has been my dad ever since I was 6, and I praise God that he's been a stable presence in my life from such a young age. As I think back, however, I can't help but wonder what would be altered today if things had gone differently. if my father had never cheated and my parents had never divorced. Let's talk about that part of you that can't help but wonder what life would have been like had none of that ever happened.
Yeah, that's a deep question. It's a hard question because I don't really know my father. My father was interested in me until he wasn't. And he's shown some more recent interest in me, again, after I went to that funeral. And that's been difficult for me because he, from the time I was about 15 onward until my early 40s, he just hasn't really been interested in me. And so that shapes you, obviously, in a number of different ways. So it's difficult for me to look back and go, what if my father, if it wouldn't have been, if it would have worked out, if he wouldn't have cheated on my mom, if he wouldn't have been selfish, if he wouldn't have been a child in many ways as an adult. It's difficult for me to even process that because that person doesn't exist in my mind, in my heart. Mm. I'm sure there were times when he was great, and looking back on that when I was like a baby, I ran across a baby picture of me before my sister was even born, my mom and my dad, and I'm like, I wonder what he was like then. They seemed happy in the picture. I wonder what it was like then, if he was responsible, if he was doing what it took to be a great father, to be a great husband, and to care well for his family. Unfortunately, that's just never been a part of my memory that incorporates my dad. So I wonder back, and does your sin define you? Well, when you're in Jesus, no, it doesn't define you. But in many ways, the sinful decisions that my father made shaped who he is as a person, and I wouldn't want that guy as my everyday dad. Mm-hmm. I'm thankful for the gift of grace that God gave me in my stepdad, who, I call my dad. So he's the one who taught me table manners. He's the one who taught me how to drive a stick shift. Hmm. He's the one who made fun of me when I liked girls. He was the one who, would drop me off. I hated this. My sophomore year, he would drop me and my sister off at school, and every single time in front of the school, he would honk the horn. Huh. And wave, bye kids, have a great day, I love you. And I was like, oh, I hate this so much. But looking back on it, I love that. I love that he did that. And so he, in many ways, has been the gift of the stability that I needed, not only with me and my sister, but with my mom. He loves my mom, and he always has loved my mom. And I praise God for who he is in my life. And he shaped not just my relationship with him, but my relationship with my mom, with my sister, and those have been gifts of goodness, of grace.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it seems to me we should ask the same question I started with when I asked, what did your parents' divorce teach you about you in terms of your identity and your belonging and, you know, how much you mattered to people? I think we should ask it about your stepdad too, because it seems like, as you just said, his involvement has been a gift of grace. Mm-hmm. What has his involvement in your life taught you about you? How has that helped shape your identity today?
Well, that I have value. I think that he never, ever, ever treated me like a stepson. You know, that typical, what you hear, that negative connotation of a stepchild. He never treated me like that. I never felt like I was the second-rate child to his biological children. I never felt like that. He always cared for me well, loved me, taught me responsibility, disciplined me where I needed to be disciplined. Of course, he has his flaws too, but, you know, tracing things back to that original event and how it shaped me for all the bad things, there are all the good things that have happened as a result. And we're still works in progress, but he, in many ways, I feel more comfortable with him as a parent than even sometimes with my mom. He's a lot more of an easygoing personality, and he's easy to talk to. Granted, we have some of the same similar interests, and maybe that's as a direct result of him. I have a deep respect for the military. I have a deep respect for a hierarchy of authority because of who I saw him to be. He's a very, very hard worker. He graduated from high school and enlisted in the military, in the Air Force, made enough money to be able to pay for his own college, went to college, graduated in 2.5 years, and then went back in as an officer and retired as a full colonel. which he was offered at the time of retirement to become a brigadier general, and he just wanted to get out. And so he works very, very hard. He's not lazy at all. And I learned my work ethic from him in a lot of ways. I learned, like I said, respect for authority. He's helped me to appreciate even fun things like the NFL a lot more, because he's way more into the NFL than I am. I'm into the NFL, but he's really into it. And so I love talking football with him. He taught me how to golf when I was real young, when I was like 12.
Sounds like he's just really been a big influence in your life.
He's been a huge influence in my life. And in many ways, I don't consider him anything other than my dad. He's not my stepdad. I've never called him my stepdad. I never called him Dave by his first name. He was always dad to me.
You know, sometimes within a sibling group, one child just bonds a little bit easier with a step-parent for a host of reasons. I'm curious, is your journey similar to your sister's or a little bit different?
It's interesting. My sister's made a lot of different choices than me. I love my sister, and she is, in many ways, a lot more gracious person than I am and a lot more like generous person than I am. But her and I have chosen very different routes. Was always the good kid in the family. I never disobeyed. I was always kind of the, because if I did disobey, I got busted like the first time. So I was always kind of the rule follower, which in many ways is great when you're a parent looking down on a kid. You want a kid who's a rule follower. However, what that did is made me think that I could earn the favor of God through my good works, that I could buy his favor, which is the opposite of grace. So that was dangerous. But I learned that in time, so thank God for that. But my sister was more of the rebel. She didn't graduate from high school initially. She did get her GED eventually, but she got pregnant in high school. She's had three different kids from two different fathers, and she's been married four times. So she's chosen a lot different routes. I think she always had a soft spot for our stepdad, Dave. Always, because he treated her really well. He treated me and her very, very well. And so I think we're both very comfortable with Dad, our stepdad. But my sister has just chosen a lot of different routes than me, and I'm not judgmental of those routes at all. There's been a lot of hard times that have been thrust into the path of my sister, and she's dealt with them with remarkable resilience and kindness, and she's still very positive to this day, and she's been dealt a lot of bad hands over the years. And so I chose to be a full-time missionary and raise support for a living. So that's just a totally different thing. That being said, you know, Jesus captured my heart in college. So for all the religiosity that I did early on in life, it really wasn't anything. And so when I came on staff with crew and then eventually family life, you know, those were choices that don't make a whole lot of sense to other people who choose different paths. So we're very different, and I want to be like her in a lot of different ways, but yeah, we're quite opposite. Being raised in the same roof, we're quite different people.
You know, just for our listeners' sake, a commentary here, this is not uncommon to have children within the same sibling group go in different directions. There's kind of a natural division sometimes in terms of how we cope with stress in our lives. And some people go a little bit more towards what we call control, or, you know, just structure to their world and their life and trying to get things right and live under that banner. And other people cope with challenges through more instability. Word sometimes is used, chaos, kind of just flying by the seat of their pants. And sometimes that leads to decisions that aren't necessarily well thought out and consequences that come from it. Each is just a different expression of, how do I cope with this? How do I live with this? How do I make sense of it? How do I deal with what's happened? And what I love about what you just said is trying to love a child where they are, whether they're adult now or whether they're still young and, you know, very fresh in how they're trying to cope with life. Loving them where they are and trying to bring stability back to their life is something that our listeners can certainly shoot for. Okay, I want to go back to the beginning a little bit now, since we kind of skipped to the end. You also wrote this. You said, When I was 4 years old, my parents got divorced for various reasons, but mostly because my father was sleeping with the woman who lived across the street. You referenced his affair a little while ago. You know, some kids, Shelby, never really know the real story about why their parents divorce. You obviously did. I'm just wondering, at what point did you come to learn this? What was the impact on you? I mean, can you remember way back when you first learned about it? How did you feel? What was the impact? And, you know, what do you even do with that now?
I did a little bit of research when I wrote that, and actually talked to my mom about it. And she, you know, to her credit, was like, it wasn't all his. That was the catalyst. She ended up having a bit of an emotional affair with a pastor at the time because he was caring for her in her hurt because of my father's infidelity. I think it's not something that I learned about when I was super young, but it was always something that would come out in moments where there would be frustration with my father for various reasons. And the main way with my mom would talk about him and the stuff that he had done in the past and why things had ended the way that they did, you know, because he was sleeping with blah, blah, blah across the street. And that being said, I always felt like maybe my father deserved some of the punishment that he was getting as a result of me kind of not wanting to have much to do with him. There was this kind of another kind of main event that happened early on when I was about, I want to say 9 or 10. We lived in Guam at the time. My dad was stationed at an Air Force base on the island of Guam, which is way out in the Pacific Ocean, if you don't know where that is, U.S. territory out there. And so we were visiting my father over the summer in California. At the end of that summer, my sister and I were like, oh, you don't want to go back like to school and blah, blah, blah. And my father had said, well, what if you stayed here and lived with me? Now, legally, he had no right to do that because he did not have custody of us, but he had convinced us that it was the right thing to do to stay there. And what does a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old know about what's best for them? So we called our mom and said, we don't want to come home. We're not coming back to Guam. And so a pastor on the Air Force base said to my mom, if you don't fight for your kids now, you're going to regret it for the rest of your life. And so she fought for us. And legally, my father didn't have a right to keep us. And so I remember still being in the house when a uniformed police officer and a lawyer came to the front door and took me and my sister, put us in the back of a car, and drove us over to our aunt's house. We flew back to Guam the next day, and just being terrified and confused and crazy. And then my mom explaining what was happening in that moment and looking back and going, oh, okay, well, he didn't have a right to do that. And he had kind of stacked the deck and kind of told us certain things that we needed to hear that we would have said to our mom on the phone, we don't want to come back with you. And so in those like kind of venomous portrayals of who my father was, there was always this like, he was the one who cheated on me. He was the one who did that. And so I knew about it kind of from a young age, but I think when it happened, when I was like 3 or 4 years old, no, I didn't know what that was. I didn't understand what that was. But I had always, looking back, I always kind of knew that my father was the one who was the catalyst and the irresponsible one because he cheated. That was the initial event, the first domino that fell.
Every once in a while, I run across a parent who says to me, okay, my former spouse had an affair. That's what ended our marriage. My children don't know. Should I tell them?
Hmm.
Do you happen to have an opinion about that?
I think it depends on the children's age. There could be a delicate way of putting that when they're younger. But, I mean, we've done an intentional job to talk to our kids. My kids are 9 and 7 now. We've done an intentional job to talk to them about what sex is, why that's a holy thing and an important thing, and why it's not to be kind of frivolously thought about or tossed around as you get older. And so I think if you're talking to your kids about those things and they understand what they mean and why they're important within the context of a marriage and why they're not to be shared with anyone else, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you should talk to your kids about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if your kids said, hey, Dad, why is your father living here and why does Grandma live here? Mm-hmm. Would you at some point feel the need to tell them, yeah, this is originally what happened in the beginning?
I think so. If you don't have an agenda, if you're willing not to spin things in a way that makes you look better and makes the other parent look poorer in the eyes of your kids, because I think you have a responsibility to care well for your kids by not demonizing your ex. Now that's hard to do, and I don't pretend to know what those things are like personally, because I've never been divorced, and I don't know what it's like. That's difficult to do, but we're asked probably to do that in a way that shows grace to other people and forgiveness, as Christ calls us to do. But at the same time, it's not just you on the line. You're talking about your kids, and you're shaping their opinions and the thoughts and feelings of their other parent, whether you recognize it or not.
You know, I was thinking as you were just talking, no, you don't know what that's like from an adult standpoint, but you kind of know what it's like from a child standpoint. I mean, the little comments made here or there that your mom dropped, or the things that your dad said, you know, do cast a shadow on the other parent and do shape your heart and mind. I mean, even to the point where you call your mom and say, hey, we want to stay and live here with our father. Like, that obviously grew out of what you felt like dad needed you to do. Somehow that you were drawn into that. That opinion was his. And the same thing's true when mom, in an angry moment, would say, well, your father, blah, 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 and essentially blame him for the whole divorce process. Kids are easily swayed by all that. And they take on the opinions of their parents. And of course you agree with your mom, or of course you agree with your father. That's your parent. Like, am I supposed to disagree? Like, unless you have reason to sit back and go, nope, you know, somehow this is your fault, that was happening with your biological father. But still, there's this desire to keep them close, you know, to agree with them about how they see the world. And that naturally pits you between the other parents. And, you know, you've talked around that a little bit already, but I just want to flesh that out a little bit more for our listeners. Even visitation, you know, moving between homes. You know, what was that like for you in terms of what flowed well? What did your parents do well? What were the things that made that really awkward and difficult for you?
It went well because we operated on a schedule. So that was, people were...
Both sides agreed to the schedule.
They both got, until my father didn't. but mostly up until that summer, there was a schedule, and like, we followed the rules there. I think there was always the element of like... It felt like vacation when it was time to go for summer visitation, which was usually, I believe, around 8 weeks. It felt like vacation. And so leaving to go on like a trip where you would enjoy, we went to amusement parks and played in the pool and that kind of stuff. That it was always kind of the summer for kids is like the greatest time ever. So I think that was a positive thing about it. And then, you know, getting back into the routine of stuff, my mom was really great at like, making sure things were done well, schedule-wise. Routine is an important thing for kids. I think my mom was really gifted at that, and we needed that structure as well. And the visitation that was, you know, that was bad is the stuff that I'd mentioned before. It was just constantly like, where do my allegiances lie? Where are my loyalties? You know, looking back at an adult, I was like, should I have had to ask those questions as a kid? No, you shouldn't have had to ask those questions. And so that was more confusing than anything of like, because, you know, my father talked about my mother in a certain way when we were there over the summer. And it was not great language, not positive at all in any way. Even like accusatory of what she used child support for, like what she used that money for.
Little derogatory comments.
Yeah, like that. Which I found out later on, he wasn't even paying child support to the degree that he should have been. And then, you know, for a long time also, this is one of the things that I had to relearn when I got married. The term Abbott's, which is my last name, was always a negative connotation in my family. The Abbott's were always like the bad family, the bad part of the family. And so when I got married and my wife Rachel and I were known as the Abbott's, there was some like intentional relearning that I had to do about my own last name, plural, because it was the Abbott's were always the bad element, and they always did the bad things, said the bad things, behaved in a bad way.
This is such an important story, because we tell our listeners on this podcast on a regular basis, when you say something negative about your child's other parent, you are in effect saying that to the child, because they know they are 50% that other
product
parent.
Of that. Yeah.
And this, you know, literally puts it into the last name, you know, oh, you, well, you're an Abbott, and we all know that's a bad thing. And so now you as an adult have to unlearn that, rethink that. Again, it speaks to identity. Mm-hmm. But that is a part of me. That is my last name. That is who I am. And yet I don't want to be associated with that. So how did you justify or rectify that in your own mind?
Part of it was, there's not a godly legacy that was left by the Abbott family, no matter how much lip service they would pay to that. And so part of me was like, I want to redeem the Abbott family name and make it a godly home, make it a godly family. I want people, when they hear the Abbotts, to think godliness. So there was like an excitement with that and a wanting to like bring renewal and, yeah, a great opportunity for me, my wife, and my kids. And I have two daughters, and so the Abbott family name is not going to be passed on, because my sister actually only has daughters as well, so it's not going to be passed on. But I'm like, I'm not huge into that, we got to have a son to pass on the family name. I get why people value that. I'm not one of those people, and so I wanted to create a godly legacy with the Abbotts. That being said, there was significant relearning, some sting that came with like hearing the Abbotts and wanting to change those things and not feeling capable of doing so because I felt labeled as such, being a little bit embarrassed about my family name.
Man, so much of this, I'm just sitting here thinking about somewhere around then you find a relationship with the Messiah, who is all about redeeming our past narratives and saying, no, wrap that into my narrative. You are now Shelby Abbott, a child of God. That had to be so powerful in your journey.
Yeah, it did. And part of it was like really recognizing that the gospel is not something that I fold into my story. The gospel is something where I fold myself into its story, his story. It's about his greater story, and that gives you automatically a meta narrative, a larger narrative to say, oh, this is I'm a part of this now. This is not just something that I add on to my life to make me feel better. You start to reshuffle the categories and then look at your life and say, yeah, Abbott meant something bad in the past when I was, but now it's like it's been redeemed because of Jesus, and oh, I'm a part of his story now. So it's not about trying to redeem my name per se. It's about adding my name to the greater plan of the gospel, and then just being thankful for the grace that God has given me. Because if it wasn't for his grace, I would have no redeemable qualities at all. So yeah, it was kind of a reorienting of my priorities.
Let's turn the corner just a little bit, but not much. You've written a number of things, articles, books. One book you wrote is called Doubt, or is about doubt.
Yeah.
Tell us the title, and in a nutshell, what's the premise of that book? And then I'm going to ask you something about it.
It's called Doubtless, like as one word, Doubtless, because faith is hard. And so it's really about wrestling with doubt in a healthy way, as opposed to shunning doubt in your life or equating doubt to unbelief immediately in your life. Welcoming doubt, wrestling with it well, and then allowing it to grow your faith as opposed to push you away from faith. Mm.
Let's talk to a parent or step-parent right now who's mindful of developing faith in their kids, and they're really being intentional about it. And we all know and believe here at Family Life, you obviously do as well, that family is a big part of faith development in children and how faith gets passed one generation to the next. And yet, let's think about blended families and the complexity of that and different households and different values being lived out between those households. I'm just curious what reflections you would have as it relates to faith development on behalf of others. It didn't sound like your journey in faith really started until you were into college, but looking back, what kinds of things would you suggest to a parent? And what things should they be mindful of?
I think that in many ways, the environment that you create in the home, you said this earlier, helps shape the minds and thoughts and belief system of our kids, for better or for worse. And so one of the most important things that I believe I said to my oldest daughter recently was like, her name's Quinn. I said, Quinn, you are not a Christian because you're in our family. That's has nothing to do with that per se. You're like, our family is a Christian family, but you're not a Christian because of that. You have to make that decision about whether or not it's personal to you. You don't adopt mommy and daddy's faith. I don't think I use the word adopt, but you don't like grasp onto our faith and call yourself a Christian because that's what mommy and daddy believes. You do it because it's your decision. And I think that we get so used to like, well, this is the way that we do things in our family. These are the decisions that we make. This is who we are. And that can lead into great things, but can also lead into dangerous things. And so instilling a sense of ownership of your own faith as a child is something really, really important that needs to be done to help a child see that they're not a Christian because they're a part of a Christian family, or they go to church and are part of a Christian church. So that's like really super important that I've tried to instill in my kids. Also, that one of the things that I point out in the book is that you know, Jesus talks about a childlike faith, and most people equate that to be a dumbed down faith or a watered down faith. And while I think there's a naivete that children have that he's referring to there, I also didn't have kids for a long, long time. And then I had kids and they started to grow up and they started to ask questions. They ask questions about everything all the time. And I kind of connected those two dots, and I said maybe Jesus was getting at, maybe a childlike faith is a question asking faith, a faith that wants to know more, that wants to go deeper, and that we should embrace questions. And so I always want my kids to feel the freedom to be able to ask me any questions that they want to about anything, and of course about faith, so that if I just go, well, you don't ask that question, you just believe, you're sweeping stuff under the rug, it will come back out again. Whether that be in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, it's going to come back out again. Embrace the questions, celebrate the questions.
And I got to just add, especially if your children are moving between homes and you know there's a different influence in the other home, questions have to come to the surface so you can have a dialogue around why you think what you think, what the Bible teaches, and you have an opportunity to help clarify truth for your kids, knowing that there's another influence of what the definition of truth is in another home from another parent figure. And so it's not easy. It's not necessarily clean. You got to have those conversations. But of course, avoid what Shelby and I talked about earlier, avoid the blaming the other home or criticizing the other home or the negativity that flows from one parent towards a former spouse. That doesn't help you gain influence with your kids as it relates to God's truth. That actually negates the things you're trying to say and teach your kids.
And in reality, it shapes your kids' opinion of you because there's many times when I realize that both of my parents are very bitter people. And that shapes my... So as much as you might be trying to throw shade at the other spouse, your ex, you're really doing that to yourself as well. You're heaping it upon yourself in the eyes of your kids, even though you might not intentionally be doing that because you might be painting a picture where you're the good one and they're the bad one.
Yeah.
But in reality, kids can see through that stuff. They can eventually go, mom's just an angry person.
That's just right.
A bitter person.
And that's what lingers about you, and you don't want that.
Yeah.
Okay, Shelby, you're in ministry full-time, thinking about it, writing about it, talking about it. Let's talk to a lay leader who's listening right now, a Sunday school teacher, maybe a senior pastor, maybe a children's ministry leader, somebody in women's ministry. What do you want them to know about growing up blended? You've been listening to my conversation with Shelby Abbott. I'm Ron Deal, and this is Family Life Blended. You know, with that last question, I asked Shelby to talk to a ministry leader. But if you're not one, I want to ask you to hang on and listen to his answer in just a minute. I think you're going to find it useful for your life as well. If you haven't subscribed to this podcast yet, boy, we would love for you to do that. And you certainly can listen on the Family Life app, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Family Life Blended. And remember to look at the show notes for links to additional resources. You can also learn about our other podcasts on the Family Life Podcast Network. You know, at one point in my conversation with Shelby, I wondered if you, the listener, were reflecting on your own childhood, even as you were pondering how to parent or step-parent your kids. I do that, so I kind of wondered if you were doing that. I think we all do that. And you know, it's really helpful to do that because one of the little traps we fall into is talking to our children as if they were someone from our past. We really do need to be mindful of our former relationships in light of the current ones. Sometimes we have something to say to a parent or a caregiver from the past, but instead, we fight that battle with a child, or for that matter, a spouse, someone in our present. Don't do that. Make sure you match up the right person with the right issue, or you'll find yourself hurting someone that you love in the here and now, and not ever getting past the past. You know, in my heart, I used to blame my wife for wanting to control me. So guess what? We had fights over control in our marriage. And then one day I realized that that issue was really about me and my father, not so much about me and my wife. In other words, the issue with my dad sensitized me, made me hypersensitive, I would say, to issues going on with my wife. So I really had to struggle about how I felt about my father. I had the right issue, but I had the wrong person. Sometimes step people do that to one another as well. They take things out on each other that really are about someone or something else from the past. If that's you, go back to where it belongs, and then you might bring a different you into the present. If you'd like more information about my guest, you'll find it in our show notes, or you can check it out on the Family Life Blended podcast page at familylife.com/blendedpodcast. And while you're there, check out everything Family Life has for your marriage and family. Our division's called Family Life Blended. We've got articles, videos, resources, books, online information about conferences and virtual classes and training, books like The Smart Step Family Guide to Financial Planning, The Smart Stepmom, and I've got a book coming up called Preparing to Blend, which is for engaged couples and premarital counselors working with couples before they get married. Preparing to Blend comes out September 2021. Check us out. The show notes will tell you how. Hey, we love your feedback. Adriana listens on YouTube and said, "Hola from Mexico. Gracias for having this information available. I am a stepmom, been struggling," she says, "time to educate myself." We're glad that we can help, Adriana, and we're trying to help everybody else as well. We'd love to hear from you. If you don't mind, write us a quick review. It encourages our team and helps others find our podcast. I mentioned earlier that each fall we put on the Summit on Step Family Ministry. It's an equipping conference that helps pastors and lay couples alike understand more about step family living and what your church can do to impact others around you. We would love to have you join us. If you'll just go to summitonstepfamilies.com for all the information you need, summitonstepfamilies.com, or look in the show notes for a link. Now, before we're done, let's get back to that question I asked Shelby about how we can help others.
The sovereign hand of God is involved in every part of our lives. God is very much up in our business. He is not absent or far away, kind of observing from the heavens. And therefore, His intentionality of being involved in the messiness of our lives is something that we should recognize and say, there's going to be messiness in the people that you work with. Ministry in general is messy. You're dealing with messy people. And when you add the complexity of blended families onto that, you can think, well, if only it would have been this way. Well, it's not that way. And by the way, there's a verse in Proverbs that talks about how the dice is thrown, but it's every decision is from the Lord. I think it's 16:33. The dice are thrown, but it's every decision is from the Lord. What does that tell us? There are no areas of life where God is not involved, where he's in control of everything. And even when things seem chaotic or out of control, God is good and he's in control and he loves us. If he wasn't good and he didn't love us, that would be terrifying. Of him being in control, but he is in control and he's good and he loves us. So that can help me to rest on the truth that while I find myself in a very difficult situation that sin is wrapped up in, that that poor decision making has happened on my part and on my ex's part and my kid's part, my stepkid's part, all of that stuff, God is still much, very much involved with that and working to redeem those things. And it's his sovereign hand that has guided me into the situation where I'm at now. So it's easy to think to look at yourself as a stepkid and go, this is second class. This is not what was supposed to be. And while there's an element of truth in that, don't ever think that God's not involved in that process, that his sovereign hand has led you to the moment for a time such as this to be able to embrace the truth about who you are. And often I found, at least with me, I mentioned, you know, we've mentioned divorce, I mentioned sexual abuse earlier, I've mentioned, I didn't mention this to you, but I've been a chronic pain patient for over 10 years. I look at those things that initially as like the bad things that shouldn't have happened, yet those are often, and most poignantly, the times where I'm able to look at and go, this is where God wants to work in my life. So you can look at the fact that you're divorced or you're a blended family and go, this is a stain on my history. That's often, and you're living proof of that, Ron, of like where God wants to work in the areas that we might look at and go, I feel shame here, but that's also a trophy of God's grace and his sovereignty and his wisdom and stuff. So it's not a mistake that my stepdad is my stepdad. It's not a mistake that my father is my father or my mom is my mom or I had step-siblings or whatever. It's not a mistake. It's to embrace the fact and open your eyes to the fact that God is working in those moments and he can use those hard things to bring out often his glory in the most intentional, magnifying ways, because it's about his goodness and grace. It's not about us.
Next time, my colleagues Gayla Grace and Shannon Simmons are going to join me, and we'll be listening to the collective wisdom of many of our previous podcast guests as they talk about what you can do throughout the year to strengthen your family.
We have had some really meaningful times as a family that were not planned. And so I think also we just have to be aware that there might be opportunities that come up on the fly.
That's Strengthening Your Family Throughout the Year, next time on Family Life Blended. I'm Ron Deal. Thanks for listening. And thanks to our Family Life Legacy partners for making this podcast possible. You can help us produce this podcast and other resources by making a tax-deductible donation specifically for Family Life Blended by going to familylife.com/blendedpodcast and clicking the donate button. Or you can just look for a link in the show notes. Our chief audio engineer is Keith Lynch. Bruce Goff, our producer. Our mastering engineer is Justin Adams. Project coordinator, Ann Encaro. And theme music provided by Braden Deal. Family Life Blended is part of the Family Life Podcast Network, helping you pursue the relationships that matter most.